Let's get down to some really basic questions. What is the purpose of a prison?
Ah, well, that's the fundamental question. And I think that Americans are still battling over what the answer is. I think that most people think that at some core level, it's about returning people to society better than when they went in. But sometimes the vengeance feeling gets in the way and we get a very mixed message in the way we run our prisons.
When someone is sent to prison, it's in part to separate them to keep the public safe. It's in part to help them acquire some life skills, as you said, education or treatment to help them when they get out. And many people think prison is a place of punishment. What should it be?
Well, it's interesting because actually, legally and in terms of the way our history is unfolded, it is actually not meant to itself be a place of punishment. Prisons, the punishment itself is the removal from society. And in fact, we as a society actually have obligations to people that are in prisons because they're effectively under state or federal care. And so ironically, if people hope that prisons are a place that will pile on punishment. That's not their intention. But we definitely have absorbed that ethos, and we don't realize quite how far we've gotten from the mark of what prisons are intended to do until we travel, you know, outside of the U.S. and see the way that other people are doing it, or even visit some of our history books to see how much more punitive being inside of prisons are today than they used to be.
There are victims of crimes. Their lives are sometimes struggles just to deal with the damage that's been done to them, whether it's physical damage or mental trauma. They don't always get the kind of care and chance to rebuild their lives that their assailant is given in prison. So how fair is that to the victims or the victims' families?
Well, that's a wonderful question. And in fact, when we think about criminal justice policy, it is essential that we think about a holistic approach. That is to say that everybody who is involved in a given incident, a terrible incident, needs to have care. And that means that people who have been the victims, for example, of an assault or the perpetrators of that assault are all there for a very much in need of care, because we want to make sure that the person who's been victimized is repaired and gets heard and feels that some measure of justice has been done. But we also want to make sure that the person who's perpetrated that offense has heard them, has not been left to imagine that it didn't matter. Or also, frankly, we need to find out why they did it. We need to figure out why they did it so that they don't do it again. So unfortunately, as much as we want this to be a simple solution, it isn't. And in fact, the countries that do criminal justice more humanely actually do victims' rights more humanely, too. They take victims very seriously, and they just lean much more heavily on the idea that people actually don't feel better in the long run by making someone else feel worse. They feel better when they're heard.
But there is great outrage when some of these people in prison are guilty of heinous crimes, appalling things. So why should society be concerned about making life decent for them in prison?
Well, it's not a matter of whether it's decent or whether it's barbaric in terms of what the public thinks. That's actually a matter of law. And just because someone is convicted of a crime or someone does time, that does not mean they check their human rights or their civil rights at the door. Now, there's a far cry from that premise, which is, in fact, the law and the way that the system is actually meant to be set up, and the way people feel about it. And I think usually people feel most resentful about a prison system when they feel that somehow someone is getting something inside of it that someone on the outside isn't. The reality is that's rarely the case. These places are hardly country clubs. In fact, they're so barbaric that when the public actually sees what kind of justice is done in their name, they feel very discomforted by it. They actually are not very satisfied with what they see. And they're also troubled when they realize that so many of the people inside, in fact, the vast majority of the people inside, are not just simply someone who's committed a harm. They're actually someone who's also been victimized time and again. And that is why we have to have a system that protects victims from the beginning so that they also are not left alone to be damaged and then go on to become perpetrators themselves.
If you were to build a prison, a system, what would it include?
Well, it's interesting because I have been asked that question a lot. I teach this subject. I spend time in prisons in the U.S., and I had never really had to see what it might look like somewhere else until I actually recently just had the opportunity to visit prisons both in Finland and in Norway. And it was just surreal. I mean, I really invite a delegation of Michigan legislators to make this trip again with me, because it was so eye-opening to see that you could, in fact, achieve people's sense of taking responsibility. You could, in fact, make victims feel heard. You could, in fact, create a society where people actually returned to their families healthier and thus better for the broader community and for their children and for their partners when they get out than when they went in. And since what we're really talking about is wanting a system that achieves public safety, I got to see what that looks like. And it's quite startling, but it's also remarkable how doable it is once we abandon the idea that vengeance gets us what we want, even while we can certainly understand the impulse towards it. It just does not get us what we want in terms of public safety or feeling heard.
Give us a small example of what you saw that was so surprising.
Well, it was really remarkable. I mean, from the top brass on down, the question that you began this segment with was the question that they start with, which is, what is the purpose of prison? And they answer that question very, very clearly, which is to make society safer and to make neighborhoods more whole and to make families repaired. And when that is where you start, you do all kinds of things. Like, for example, you understand that when someone comes in, they will eventually come home. So you want to make sure that they don't come home less educated, for example, than they went in, because then they'll be more likely to commit harm. You want to make sure that they have kept their family relations intact so that they have a place to come back to rather than be an outcast in society and therefore hostile to society. And so, everything from a more humane visiting center for the children that visit their incarcerated parents to actual vocational training to actual education so people can become, you know, better participants in the society they return to. I mean, it's all there. And this is not a society that forgives heinous crimes lightly. It is a society that understands that public safety is the goal.
You are listening to Stateside. I'm speaking with Pulitzer Prize winning historian Heather Ann Thompson about the purpose of prisons. This series began when the Stateside team went to Lakeland Correctional Facility in Coldwater, Michigan. At that prison, about 44% of the population is made up of lifers, and a lot of them are older. There's a geriatric center there. But the question came up, how can the prison provide purpose and meaning for someone who's not going to get out, who's sentenced to life in prison?
Well, that's a wonderful question. And the answer is, it is incredibly difficult to imagine that. I mean, for starters, we can do some basic things, like we don't continue to punish and torture people who are never, ever going to get out in the United States. I mean, there is such a diminishing returns when we do that. We end up having more old age prisons in our country than any other country on the planet. It's really, again, counterproductive to the broader society. But we really need to investigate this whole idea of a life sentence. No country hands out life sentences the way that we do, and yet they have much better public safety indices. And so that tells us something. I mean, we really need a more scientifically informed, empirically logical approach to criminal justice. So life sentences themselves are not something that other countries are comfortable with for exactly that reason. They believe that we need incentives. They believe that people actually are never the same person at age, 20 as they are at age 50, that everyone has the capacity to learn from their errors and to grow as a person. And to stimulate that capacity to, inform it is important for all of us. And let me just really stress that. So everybody that goes inside is a member of a family and a member of a community. And so when we make them better, the fallout from that is exponential on the outside as well. And that's the kind of the missing piece of the puzzle that we seem to have forgotten in our quest for vengeance.
Let me challenge that just a little bit. I was talking to one of the older lifers, and he looked at me with a pretty cold stare and said, "I am a bad man." And we went on and continued our conversation, and he basically was saying, "I should never be released." And if you've got somebody in who feels like they've done something so horrible and that they could do it again, shouldn't they be sentenced to life?
Well, of course, there's all kinds of, you know, what we call sort of the fringe stories, which is to say that people either who have designated themselves as unredeemable, in small part because they have been, you know, in the system for so long and have kind of absorbed that ethos so deeply, or, you know, those fringe cases where we always go immediately to, you know, the serial killers or the most extreme cases. And certainly every society has to deal with severely damaged human beings. And they may or they may not return to society easily or quickly or even without enormous preparation and consideration. So it isn't that everyone automatically gets out, but it certainly is the case that we have life sentences handed out like candy in this country. So many people are serving life sentences for drug offenses when they were in their teens and in their 20s. We, Michigan, sentenced more children to life sentences than any other state than Pennsylvania. And the idea that we as a society don't believe, for example, that someone who's 13 years old is a different person by the time they are 20 years old or 30 years old really is not honest about their own development. And frankly, it flies in the face of science.
The prison population in Michigan is going down, and the state has been closing some prisons, but it's still a huge amount of money. There have been attempts to try to save money by going to private food services and private health care providers. What do you think of those efforts overall to save money when we're talking about incarcerating people?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it is such, as they say, bass-ackwards approach to criminal justice. We know for a fact that in the United States of America, for all of our history, our incarceration rates remained relatively stable and relatively low. And in fact, we know that there is no correlation between super high prison rates and this public safety indices, except for negatively correlated. In other words, intensely incarcerated populations tend to be less safe. So what that tells us is that if we're trying to save money by privatizing rather than save money by rethinking our sentencing policy, that we are, again, just embarking on a fool's errand. It does not make sense to privatize because that simply puts another incentive to lock people up for longer. And it's not just a pie in the sky claim. It actually plays out in real time. Our state legislators get lobbied. Our federal legislators get lobbied by private companies who are making a lot of money off of criminal justice who don't want to see prison sentences reduced and they don't want to see prisons closed. So we've just injected a profit motive into a whole system of human misery. And that just, it doesn't make sense. I frankly think it's immoral. And notably, we don't have to do it because we have an entire legacy of American history to look back on and see that we can have lower prison rates and not get more crime.
You took a deep dive into a certain period of incarceration in Blood in the Water, your book. Have we seen changes and improvements since that Attica prison uprising in 1971?
Well, there's tremendous ironies. You know, on the eve of Attica, we were actually, as a nation, beginning to decarcerate. We were reducing prison populations. We actually believed, Americans, when they were polled, believed that prisoners had basic human rights. The law reflected a greater humanization of conditions on the inside. And Attica is really tragic because it was an uprising to improve conditions more. I mean, the conditions there remain terrible. But because of lies told about that particular event by the part of state officials, and because in general there was such a backlash to the civil rights ethos, we actually built the prisons, you know, the way that we see them today, we built them in the wake of that moment. Prisons got more inhumane in so many places as a backlash. So we're really dealing with prisons as sort of the backlash to the 60s. And I know many viewers and listeners will hear that and say, roll their eyes. You know, what do you mean? This is about crime. It's not about politics. Well, you know, the thing is, we actually have had numerous blue ribbon panels come together of all political political persuasions and myriad different disciplines and studied this within an inch of its life. And there is no question that we began this massive war on crime for political reasons, and the crime rate actually waxed and waned in its wake, but we kept on building prisons and filling them.
You've researched prisons and prisoners in America for years. What hope do you have that state and federal prisons will do some of the things you want to see in a correction system, something more like your visits to the prisons in Norway and Finland?
Well, I you know, it's sometimes it feels hard to be optimistic when we see that we're continuing, for example, to talk about building a jail in Detroit, a youth jail. I mean, just completely out of step with what the science tells us and what we know historically. Same thing is true right now in New York. They're going to close Rikers Island, but they want to build four new jails. So in that sense, it feels very, very daunting to imagine a change. On the other hand, there's tremendous goodwill right now, for example, in the Michigan state legislature. There's tremendous activism on the ground. A lot more people who've served time on the inside are now home and advising us as to what really needs to happen, and people are finally listening. And frankly, we are doing more trips abroad. And once you see that it is possible, you kind of come back and you think, my God, how wrong have we gotten this? And so that's all happening too.
Where does Michigan rank nationally for quality of prisons and its correction system?
That's a tough question. On the one hand, it has had some very good marks for actually trying to take seriously things like expungement legislation, rolling back the impulse that we had for a very long time of denying, say, parole for children who'd been given life sentences. So on the one hand, we've got some good things to talk about. And on the other hand, we still remain the state with so many people. I mean, we have as many people in prison in Michigan as the entire country of Canada. And if that doesn't kind of give us pause when we know, for example, that Canada also has poverty and racial tensions and all of that, then you know, Michigan still has work to do.
Heather Ann Thompson is a professor at the University of Michigan. Her book, Blood in the Water, The Attica Prison Uprising of 1971 and Its Legacy, was awarded the Pulitzer Prize in History. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you so much. Take care.